Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today we've got a handful of really interesting topics. One, there's a lot going on in the world of food and wine right now, and Cindy's going to give you a little current events. Two, we're going to go deep into the subject of rice and honestly just keep it restricted to the West and not even get into all the variations on rice in Asia. But Cindy has a lot of expertise in a bunch of different forms of rice cookery to talk about. And we're going to have on our producer segment an excellent sparkling wine producer from San Sadurni in Spain, Jose Reventos, our friend Pepe Reventos, who's living in the U.S. right now but goes back and forth to make wine for his family's winery. And he has a really interesting story. And he's also quite an expert on Spanish food and wine and culture. And all that is what's coming up on the program. So, Cindy, let's start with the current events. So you're all excited this time of the year because all kinds of announcements come out, right?
Mm-hmm. The Beard Foundation Awards, the semifinal nominations are out. And also, I can never wait to get my new Michelin guide for France because I want to see, you know, what's changed and, you know, who might have gotten a third star. So it's always really exciting because I think the Michelin guide is really an excellent guide, and we've used it ever since we first started traveling to France. It's especially if you're in a little village where you just don't know where to go, and it really does. It's a very helpful book.
Well, the origin of the Michelin Guide is, I think it's 1905 or so. They wanted people to drive more because they wanted to sell more tires.
They wanted you to wear out your tires.
Very
exactly.
Simply, if you give you reasons to travel places, so all the ratings, all the star system for the Michelin Guide, the famous Red Guide. Is based on, is it worth a stop? Is it worth a detour? Or is it worth a journey? And that's literally how those one, two, three stars, you know, kind of came about.
Mm-hmm.
And they still use that same terminology now.
It's such a great thing. Well, one of the restaurants in Rheims in the Champagne region just got its third star. So that's Assiette Champenoise. So I'm very excited that there's a three star in that region that, you know, we can check out sometime, hopefully on a trip. I love the food of that region. There are now 27 three-star restaurants in France. Of course, they rate Spain and Italy and the United States now as well. And that was a big deal, actually, talking about the United States. That was a very big deal when they finally came to the United States several years ago.
Now, they're in what? I know they're in New York and San Francisco in the U.S. Anywhere else?
I'm not sure. I'd need to look that up. But yes, I know they came to New York first, of course, and then did San Francisco. And I just hope someday they come to Washington and include, you know, Maryland in the Washington market, as I think they'll probably include Virginia because of the Inn at Little Washington, I would hope.
It'll be interesting to see what logic they use. I know for me, spending a lot of time on Mediterranean food and on food from Italy and Spain,
mm-hmm.
I get, and maybe Middle European food, as much as I love food in France, I love food in a lot of the other places in Europe as well, or sometimes, you know, I'm more excited about it. And sometimes I feel like the ratings are a little bit different for some reason.
I would agree with you on that. Absolutely. It is a little different. We've gone to some three stars and, you know, you just kind of, yeah, it does feel different. I agree with you.
There are three stars in France that I don't think stack up to historically what we found in some places in Spain for two stars.
Mm-hmm.
And in Italy, I think it's just like must be the perspective of the inspectors and the evaluators that the Michelin system, you know, the Michelin guide uses, and I assume that they're all French. I don't know.
Yeah, who know? We don't know. So, but it would be interesting to know.
It's a little bit like you know, watching the humor in another culture in movies. It's not always that funny to us. Maybe for the French, maybe the humor on this guy's menu and.
I understand what you're saying. Absolutely. So. Well, you know, and chefs have died by their third star. I mean, literally. I mean, it means so much, particularly to. In France, it means so much to get that third star. It means more business. It means, you know, it means everything. It's what people strive for. It is the ultimate goal, that and the Milieu Ouvrier, you know, to get that award as well.
I think you're referring to the two three-star Michelin chefs who either, you know, that thought they were going to lose their star, that people said they came out in the headlines when
Bernard
Loiseau
and Sayou,
which is a beautiful place and
an
excellent restaurant.
That's in Burgundy, right?
Yeah. Sayou. It's on the Morvan Plateau. It's about 45 minutes or maybe 50 minutes away from Beaune in Burgundy.
We've eaten there.
It's a beautiful place
there.
And a very good restaurant and
beautiful village.
Yeah, But I think that he was that's a mental health issue for him.
Well,
I think he was pretty famously manic depressive, and I think the pressure maybe of it was part of it for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a mental health thing.
But he had heard that the third star was going to be lost, and he, you know, so
yeah,
it's very sad that someone would. It mean, you know, but as you say, with his situation, it was a little bit more complicated in there.
Yeah, I think for people in the business, so if you lose sight of, you cook to please the people in the seats, and you cook to, you know, you have the privilege
Absolutely.
To lead your team and to teach your people. That's the,
mm-hmm.
that should be the heart of it. In the States, you were talking about the James Beard Awards. Now that's not as shadowy a system exactly as the Michelin. They have one or two sort of secret inspectors that come in and see you.
Mm-hmm.
The James Beard is a much more seemingly democratic sort of system.
Well, and they have to put things online. You know, people want answers. So they, you know, and I've had many people ask me, you know, how do they decide? And my answer has always been, I have no idea. So Eater.com recently did a little bit of an article on it, and they have a list of who the committee is. And it's a number of writers throughout the country, editors, et cetera, throughout the country. And then it goes to I think it's 250 people in the industry that represent the different regions, and it's also to people that have won the award, and then it's another group of people. And then those people are actually the ones that decide the nominations, and then there is a subcommittee. So I don't know. You know,
it sounds as complicated as the U.S. legislative process,
okay.
and maybe as efficient, but
not sure. But it's you never know what's going to happen, and. But I think you can put a little bit of a store in the Michelin Guide and maybe go out and get one. I think it comes out in April, and they are written in French. So, but you can eventually
get
one
in
English copy. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a month later you get it coming.
Yeah,
out
I think exactly. It's a little bit later, and you know, just go ahead and order one so you have it come to your house. You know, and I keep them from year to year. I have one that I picked up when we were in France on a trip from 1968, and so I've started to collect the older ones, which is actually used on that trip. Remember, because we were in Lyon.
I was not in France with you in 1968. I just want to make that clear.
No. I didn't say that. I said I picked up a 1968 guide. Oh, yeah, we actually used it because we were in Lyon. We were getting ready to go to Paul Bocuse, and we needed the address. And, of course, it was actually 1969. He had the three stars in 69.
I think he's had three stars in more than 40 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm like, this is still accurate, and it's from 1969. Pretty cool. So now we're going to talk about rice.
So let's have to go from what's a fun political sort of process to something as unsexy as rice. So I'm looking for you to take rice grains and somehow add some real zhuzh.
Well,
to it.
For some reason, I love working with rice.
You have a special talent for rice.
Well, and all right, you want to talk about sexy. Risotto is sexy because it is
silky. I knew you were going to start with risotto.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to start with Southern, but we'll go right into risotto because you had to bring up the word sexy. I love the process of making risotto. You stir slowly. You stir for 25 to 30 minutes. You give it all of your attention. You do not walk away from it at all. It is truly a love a love story with your risotto, and that is made from either arborio rice or some sort of short grain rice that has a high starch content.
And people often think risotto with this, risotto with that, risotto with the other. But risotto in its essence is really only four things, right? I mean, can you maybe just from the simplest risotto from putting rice in the pan to finishing on the plate, can you take a couple minutes and do step
sure.
by step? Okay, so step one.
Step one, we would saute the rice gently in butter or oil, some sort of oil, for about a minute or two on low heat. And you're sort of toasting it, but you do not actually want it to color. Meanwhile, your stock has to be on, whatever that is. It could be an aromatic broth. It could be chicken stock. It could be seafood stock.
So you have two pans going.
I do.
You're just using a saute pan. You get that pan hot. Then you add the butter. And once that melts, then you add the rice, and you're toasting that for a minute or two. And in the other pan, you have the stock
mm-hmm.
already hot.
And I'm actually not using a saute pan. I use a pot to make my risotto.
So the pot you're actually going to make the risotto in.
Exactly. So I'm sauteing.
So it's something heavy bottom.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I usually use copper. If you have that at home, I would suggest it. And yes, so your stock needs to be, whatever that is, needs to be at a slow simmer. Well, and so you get both of those, that you get that going first, excuse me, and then you get your pan going with your rice. And then you, if you want to do the simplest of risottos, I would have sauteed onion first. So I would have sauteed onion in that butter first, then I would add the rice, work it for a minute or two, and then you begin to add your liquid with a ladle. And I strongly suggest that you cover that rice with your liquid. You want it just above the liquid to be just above the level of the rice, because you want all that rice to cook at this exact same time. I have seen people try in the kitchen try to do like maybe 80% of the level. I'm like, no. You have to cover the rice with the liquid. Constantly stirring. I use a wooden spoon, a plastic spatula, whatever you're comfortable with, and you're just always stirring. And obviously that broth is what's so important. And if, again, if we're making the simplest of risotto,
the quality of that broth.
Yes, it needs to have flavor, because that rice is absorbing all of that broth, and that's, well, that's what it's going to end up tasting like. So you want to make sure you have salt in there, and whatever you're, you know, let's just pretend we're not just doing chicken stock. Say we're doing saffron stock, and you want to make sure that saffron has worked itself, that it's in that stock doing its thing. And then you finish with a little bit of butter. Ready. I always add a little bit of butter at the end. Again, it helps to keep the rice separate, and also a little bit of Reggiano cheese, something high quality.
Okay, so when we come back on the second segment, I want to give you one or two of the risotto questions, mm-hmm. and then let's talk about a couple of different kinds of southern rice.
And Persian rice.
Persian rice that I know you love.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to talking about that.
All right, very good. So we'll be back with more rice chatter on Farm and Wolf on Food and Wine.
There we go.
Thank you.